The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
I'm Senga and welcome to Heritage South, the show connecting Southlanders to their heritage and where we talk heritage happenings here in the South. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back to Heritage South, QE2 Trust Southland Representative Jessie Blithall. It's lovely to have you back. And she's going to help share some heritage stories of our Southland land. Now, I actually met Jessie through this year's Southland Heritage Month.
That's right.
And through chatting over a coffee and joining the South Alive Q Bush walking tour, which she did the walking tour commentary on, I realised that she has a really unique understanding and depth of knowledge, along with being absolutely passionate about the land. So I thought we'd invite Jessie back. And this time we're going to have a chat about a particular piece of our land here. So at the turn of the 20th century, Kew, where Kew Bush is, was a township overlooking the estuary. And in 1906, the forest here came into the ownership of Southland Hospital and has been protected by a QE2 open space covenant since 1989. Kew Bush was originally set aside as a quiet place of reflection for the nurses who were working at the hospital. Now, all of this information is actually included on the latest South Alive's South Invercargill Heritage Trail Board, which they unveiled at Southland Hospital during Heritage Month. And I was absolutely fascinated to learn a little bit about the history of Kew Bush, which is one of only two remaining remnants of the original Potocarp Forest here in Invercargill, the other being Thompson's Bush to the north of the city. Now, you feature on the board, Jessie. There's a quote from Jessie on the board, and you say it is rare, a miracle, to have an ancient forest remnant with a cityscape. So tell me a little bit about Kew Bush and why, in your opinion, it's so special.
Sure. So, yeah, it is. I will declare I am quite biased. Most things that have native plants in them anywhere are special to me, so I'm probably a bit of an easy pushover. But this one in particular is special because it's a rare kind of forest type. So there used to be a lot more of it, and now there's significantly less. The other reason it's special is it's significantly old. So there are trees in there that are centuries and centuries old. So they predate European arrival by a big stretch. And I estimate, it's a little hard to sample trees without sort of harming them, but I estimate there are a few in there that are comfortably in the 500-year mark. There's one remu down the end that's on a dune. It's a very sort of free-draining and fertile spot. So it could be quite a lot older than it looks, just because it would have been a harder job growing in a spot like that. So, it's pretty cool.
And if people haven't been and done the walk around Kew Bush, my goodness, they really should, because when you go in there and you can see all of the amazing native plants and trees that are in there, it is very, very special. So we talk about the native forest and what it was like. Of course, it covered pretty much the whole of the Southern Plain before European
mostly
came.
There were areas that were too wet to support forest, and they would have had tussock and sedge land and flax land. Early settlers, Māori and the very early Polynesian settlers, would have cleared some land using fire, but it would have grown back with more native plants. So it was a mosaic of mostly forest with pockets of open country as well. Kahikatea swamp forest, it loves to live in very wet areas and on quite fertile soil. So that makes it a little vulnerable to land clearance.
So what kind of trees are people going to see if they go down to Kew Bush?
I could list all of them, but that would take a while. But the big obvious ones are mostly kahikatea. So that's our tallest native tree, a really beautiful tree, and like I said, a swamp specialist. They love to have wet feet. So apologies if you're in there under wet conditions. The track is just above the waterline, but if you see lots of ponding and surface flooding, that's actually fine. That's how the forest likes to be. It enjoys being wet. There's also some totara. There is remu, as we mentioned before, And some of the flowering plants that are in there are things like kāmahi, pōkaka. There's some very big, impressive pōkaka in there, actually. Yeah, really handsome tree.
And they'll be attracting birds, I would imagine.
Yeah, they do. So they have pōkaka in particular is very reliable in its fruiting. So that's a great one for the birds. And then in the understory, the smaller trees, the sub-canopy things like the seven finger, the pate, lemon wood, and various different species of caprosma, they all have their own phases and fruiting periods. And so it's an amazing resource for birds. And because of the wonderful work by the volunteers in there, the Friends of Kew Bush, they do a lot of trapping and a lot of pest control. That's a beautiful menu of native fruits for the birds to feed on, and they don't have too much predator pressure. So it's great bird song when you go in there too.
So just for people who might not be aware of what an open space covenant is under the QE2 Trust, GC, can you just let us know what the covenant on that land actually means?
Sure. So it's essentially, in a nutshell, a legal contract between anyone who owns the title of that land, in this case it's Health New Zealand, and the QE2 National Trust. And the contract says this area is special for certain stated reasons. Each covenant will be a little different, so it'll have its own reasons in there. And these are the things we mustn't do. So these are the things we should not do because they will harm these values that are being protected with the covenant. A covenant, occasionally we get a bit informal and we say covenant meaning the space protected by that legal mechanism. So maybe covenant area is a good term. And then covenant itself is actually the legal constraint on the title. Yeah, that protects the area.
Yes, and you know, these very special pieces of native forest really do need to be protected. We don't want it to become overrun with weeds and unwanted pests and things like that. So you mentioned the Friends of Kew Bush. Now, I know that, you know, back in the early 1980s that the hospital had started doing some restoration in the forest, but actually this was taken on by the volunteers and they have been the stalwarts behind making sure that the natural forest doesn't get overtaken. So tell me a little bit about the work that these wonderful people do.
I could just wax lyrical about these guys all day. They are big heroes of mine. But yeah, in a nutshell, it's my favourite term today, they've been working in there for nearly 30 years, particularly John Tate and Alan McPherson, and they are just so passionate about it. They are slowing down a lot now, but they've got some wonderful helpers, and yeah, they've really tackled some significant weed issues. It was unrecognisable. I've looked at notes and photos from the period before they got stuck in. Holly, as far as the eye could see, blackberry, various other problematic weeds like ivy. So they helped form a walking track so people can enjoy the space and interact with it and not get scratched in the face and lost, you know. And also, persistently and repeatedly controlled those weeds. There's still a few weeds in there, but the back of the problem has been broken. Mm. And this really takes diligent work because some weeds are quite hard to control. You don't just go in and hit them once and leave. You need to be there every year.
I do think, though, that if I remember rightly, back when they first started doing that work, they also had to take out a lot of stuff that had been dumped there. That, you know, there were people that had
Maybe a bit of fly tipping had happened. I'm not sure, but yeah, there was probably some random bits of, I don't know, old couches and whatnot that needed removing.
One of the things that really struck me when we were doing the walking tour during Heritage Month was that many of the people that were there that came on the walk had some connection to the place. So they'd grown up very close to it and they had childhood memories of being in the bush. And you know, being the storyteller that I am, I love to hear other people's stories. And they love to share those stories as well. And maybe to have that younger generation understand that it's not just a group of trees that is.
Exactly, yeah. They're not just green mush in the background. There's a whole kind of complex story behind them, and they're here for a reason. They're still here because somebody didn't cut them down. I think it's very easy when we move through the landscape and we see all sorts of things, fields and cities and streets and various things, to think that that's just how things are. But of course, if you rolled back the clock, it would have been quite different. And when we see a little pocket of something that's still there, it's a little glimpse back in time as to what was there. And there's a whole story behind why it's still there. And those are really fascinating to me. And I love it when I work with other landowners who tell me the stories behind why their family chose to protect something or what was behind their motivation. And the Kew Bush one, I think the story about being set aside as a quiet place of reflection for the nursing staff is beautiful because maybe they didn't have the words for it back then about how much of a maybe a toll nursing and healthcare takes on people and the mental well-being and just general mental health stuff. But they obviously appreciated that having a place to quietly sit, listen to some birdsong, get away from the hustle and bustle of the ward would have been really beneficial to staff. And it's a marvellous thing that they did to set it aside back over 100 years ago, back when they did.
I live to the north of the city, and so I'm more familiar with Thompson's Bush. But it has that same effect. It's that idea of being able to hear the bird song, though sadly we don't seem to hear quite as many birds these days.
They do suffer.
It's a whole other podcast. But, you know, it's that mental health and well-being where you feel good when you're out in nature and experiencing that. And how lucky are we to have these two remnants in a city?
Yeah, it is very rare to have large old growth urban forest like that in New Zealand. And I think back to the benefits of being in the forest, the volunteers themselves report, and I agree because I do volunteer work in other spaces too, it's very fulfilling to do volunteer work. I know that sounds like, you know, putting a halo on your head, but people actually really enjoy it. They're doing something meaningful. They're doing it together with other people. And it could be picking up rubbish at the beach. It could be, you know, helping out with the kids' sports. It could be anything. But it's particularly fun, I think, in the natural world because we're so geared as humans to be in the natural world and we feel very at peace in that space. And, yeah, I think it's a nice community building exercise for people to join together and go and nail some weeds or trap some pests or rake the track or the things that the Kew Bush volunteers get up to.
And I think too that there's that opportunity for that intergenerational stuff to happen. So for those conversations to happen and for young people to actually literally be able to roll their sleeves up and do something that they can, after a couple of hours work, they can look back and go, oh, wow, look what I've managed to do in that time. But have those people there that know the stories and help them to understand why in their turn it's important for them to come through and look after that land as well.
I agree. I'll probably fumble this quote, but I read a great little quote the other day in the Waters of Waikawa, which is a book I've just been enjoying lately, which is really neat. And I think it was Ruth Hayes who said, we need to know about the past and how times were hard because it helps give us perspective of the times now and helps us overcome challenges now. And I mean, that's not exactly how she said it, but that's the sentiment. And I think when the younger volunteers, for example, talk to Alan and John about how monstrously big the weed problems were, for example, and, you know, they might be slaving away, picking out all these fiddly little weeds and they're everywhere and it just feels endless and quite overwhelming. And then you hear about how much worse it was and how the problem's really been pushed down to a manageable size, that does help. I think it provides quite a lot of motivation and perspective, so it's pretty useful.
Yeah. I think it just makes the need for it so much more real for that younger generation coming through. And of course, you know, they're learning, hopefully now they're learning about our local history and why it's important and what happened before they were here, and I think that's really important. I think though there are some great opportunities for people to get involved in looking after these very special places. So have you got any idea about how people can go about joining up with a group?
Probably the simplest thing is to look them up on Facebook. So there is a Friends of Kew Bush Facebook page. It's a closed group, but just message them and say, hey, we'd like to find out what's going on and can we join? And then that's where you find out all the alerts about when there might be an event down there or a wedding bee or a planting bee. That's probably the simplest way. Or you could just contact me. My name is published on the QE2 National Trust website, so under Regional Rep for Southland, so you can find all my contact details there.
Yeah, that would be great, Jessie.
But the SIT students have got involved quite a lot recently. So Jordan Trail at SIT has been taking them down there. And just what you were saying, Singa, about educational opportunities and that next generation. It's really nice to see that. That's a recent development, so that's really great to see.
Yeah, so if you're a teacher listening to this, you might think this is a really good thing I could do with my class. So do get hold of either Jessie or myself and we'll see if we can put you in touch with the right people. It's been great to chat again. And Jessie, I'm sure it won't be the last time. I'm sure we'll come back and talk about some of the other really special places around Southland and some of those amazing people who are doing great things with their land. Thanks for joining me on Heritage South. This show is available as a podcast from Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download this episode. Just look for us in the Programs tab. Links can also be found on Facebook through Radio Southland's page, facebook.com/Radio Southland, and also on Heritage South at Heritage South NZ. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast platform, through the Access Media app, or on Spotify.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.